Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it is another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Good to see you once again. And you are talking this week, continuing a discussion on trusts for your spouse.
Trust
for your spouse, not again, not how to trust your spouse.
Right, but no, not that
legal
one.
Legal documents that work, and why even discuss this topic?
Yeah, that's a great question. We need to have an understanding that there are opportunities in estate planning to protect the ones that you love. So most estate plans just simply give everything away. Here you go, and there's really no thought process or planning involved in the transfer of wealth or in the transfer, whether it's to a spouse or to other beneficiaries. And when we don't plan, we forfeit many opportunities. So we forfeit tax opportunities. If we just simply give everything to a spouse or give everything to kids, then there's no tax planning. If we simply move assets to other people, we forfeit protection opportunities. And so there's many opportunities that exist within good estate planning that if we don't stop and really talk about an issue in depth, then, well, we've lost the ability to think through what is best for my situation. Really, that's really the entire purpose of our discussion, and having this radio show is really twofold: give good information to the body of Christ and encourage them to seek after God's wisdom and God's passion for what their estate plan is supposed to look like. And then when you hear that voice, react to it. So we have to be people who react and actually move into doing something, right? Because if we hear the word and then we're not actors of it, then it was really for naught. So therefore, we need to listen for wisdom, listen for what we need in our own lives, and then actually take a step towards it. So a very necessary discussion, specifically with our spouses, because spouses are in different places in life. And so we need to think through what is the best opportunity for each other so that we can ensure the financial safety and financial wherewithal that we have to ensure our spouse, should we be the first one to die, actually have something for long term.
What is the difference between just the normal, like, you know, the Paul Grant family trust versus Paul's wife trust?
Yeah.
Why is there a difference there?
Yeah. So if I create a trust, then it's going to be together with my spouse because we live in a community property. During our lifetime, that has several benefits. There's more clear instructions, or there should be more clear instructions on what happens should I need assistance during my lifetime. We call that disability. And so if I'm ever disabled, I want to give clear directions on my money philosophy and what to do with my assets to best care for me so that my financial philosophy is not derailed during a time period when someone else may be managing what I have set aside for myself. But in that, that means that if I were driving down the road and I was in a bad car accident, it was my fault. Everything that I have under my control in my trust, that is susceptible still to creditors. And so I'm unprotected, just like I am today. So if I just have a checking account, no trust, have a will, or have no estate planning whatsoever, same scenario, then I'm trusting my car insurance to protect me. Mm. Now, if I were to die in the storyline and create a trust with my portion of community property, then that portion becomes known as irrevocable. Now, that is protected for the people I say can have access to it. So if I'm married, the first person who's going to get access to that is my spouse. So I don't take anything from my spouse. So all I'm doing is setting aside, and I'm taking advantage of a tax structure and then these protections to say that if something goes wrong in my wife's life after I am deceased, then this money is set aside for her. So if I just gave it back to her, then there's no tax protections. There's no tax advantages that I've created. And that money is now, again, re-exposed to just, I hope life goes well. I don't like to hope. I want to know. And so, hope gives us a direction. Even in our faith, hope is only a barometer to move us into faith. And so it, similarly, yes, I hope I can protect my wife, but now that I hope something, I have to investigate how to actually make that happen. And it may not be as simple as just, here you go, here's our joint account, you take over should I die. Yes, it got to the right person, but did it get to the right person in the right way? There's more that we can do with good, solid estate planning than simply put money in somebody's hands. And that's why it's an important conversation. And that would really be the difference of what happened, or what am I creating at the time of estate planning? Everything's exposed. Everything's within our control. Versus if one of us dies, then it becomes an irrevocable trust to protect my spouse. And it sets up for a better opportunity in most scenarios.
What about if your spouse was never the person who handled the finances in the family? Is there something that you can do with this spouse trust that will help that?
Yeah, that's one of the bigger reasons why we want to possibly think through these questions is because if indeed, and as a matter of fact, in my experience, Mark, that is how it typically is happening within a marriage. One person manages the finances, the other person fully leans into the person who has that role, because we take on different roles in marriages. So I have a client who passed away about 6 months ago, and that is the exact scenario. The surviving spouse has never touched the finances. The other one did everything. They have rental properties, bank accounts, investments, and the list goes on. So not only is this individual in the grieving process of losing a spouse, but now they have to take on the entire role of managing everything and working through it. So with a well-designed plan, a lot of that can be alleviated. So if someone has not managed the finances, making sure, for example, that other trusted partners that you lean into, other trusted individuals, are a part of the plan. So, for example, if you're a business owner, there may be a business partner you have, or there may be an associate who has very strong knowledge that you may want to include into your plan, that they don't get the asset, but they walk beside your spouse to assist in that moment. You may work with financial advisors. It's important that they are actually within your plan, not as a power play, but as an advisory role. So that there is a clear indication of who you trust in the individuals that are supposed to come alongside of the people that are left behind. And don't think that just because you use a financial advisor that my spouse already knows. Actually, I have watched many clients that if they are in that role of managing the finances, the other spouse is really not engaged that much at all. And so they are disconnected from the relationship. They're disconnected from even where the checking accounts are. They're disconnected from auto pay and what you have already set up. So designing a plan that ensures that there are individuals who know where these things are, where your assets are, and how they're managed is actually a very critical transition piece for a surviving spouse that's left behind. Now, it can happen the other way as well. So if the home caretaker is actually the one who leaves first, now, again, the responsibility of everything that two people did are placed upon one person's shoulders. And so do we have simultaneously the proper setup to ensure the safety net? Maybe not the money. So now the money is still being managed properly, but now the house is going to start going downhill. Where to get meals, how to assist in getting the home clean. These are things that some people have never done in their life. and it becomes a real stretch. Usually family members have to step in, but there are resources and opportunities with good estate planning to ensure that these are all lined up. And some of these things can go into a plan. Other things are just simply, do you have a strong relationship with people around you that can give wisdom and advice when the incident takes place? And so being connected to, in a relationship with an attorney that actually walks everybody through the process instead of just creates a document then wishes you luck, is actually one of the key components to, at least that's how we run our practice, and that would be my recommendation, is find an attorney that has relationship at its core so that when these incidents happen, there's resources available automatically. And it's not a disconnect, whether it's the financial, whether it's the practical, home running. All these things play a part. And when a spouse becomes ill or when a spouse dies, now everything falls to one person. And that's a big responsibility. That's a load that we're not used to. And there is a definitive transition period. We got to have good estate planning. Otherwise, we're just leaving our spouse in the lurch.
Yeah, we don't want to do that. And we're talking about how to create that trust for your spouse this week. There are previous shows in this series, too. You can get at legacyandfaith.com. And that's also where people find out more about your services, right?
Yeah, yeah. So past podcasts, there's educational opportunities coming up at legacyandfaith.com. Ways to communicate with us as well. So we have all of our podcasts listed there. It's a great resource in ways to make sure that you can connect with us at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Hi, this is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. I will be presenting a half-day session on faith and finances, irresistible generosity. In this session, I will walk us through what it looks like to apply our faith over our finances in a biblical manner so that we can accomplish kingdom purposes. We all deal with finances in one way or another, so let's find out how this journey of faith applies to our money. Faith and Finances will be presented on Saturday, July 16th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., graciously hosted by Venture Church in Mill Creek. There's no cost to attend, so join me on Saturday, July 16th for Faith and Finances, Irresistible Generosity. You can find more information at legacyandfaith.com and sign up for this Faith and Finances opportunity.
Many families realize that with the passing of each generation, their family legacy is disappearing and they're feeling regret. To alleviate this heartache, Memories Worth Telling writes their family story and creates a beautiful heirloom book to preserve their unique history. Go to memorieswordtelling.com to schedule your initial consultation and learn how they can capture your legacy. Once again, that's memorieswordtelling.com.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant, and continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland this week, looking at the trust for your spouse, creating something special for your spouse's needs if you should pass away or become disabled.
Right.
And very important discussion. And what other kinds of instructions can be put into that kind of trust?
Well, really, it's an open slate. It's a clean blackboard, if you would, that we can walk up and really design anything that is within your vision to protect your family and your spouse. So not only can we protect a spouse, but we can also make provisions for other people in the family. So again, we split the trust in two in a community property state. So if I were to die, my portion of community property then goes into an irrevocable trust, while my spouse's portion of community property stays within her absolute complete control. So what if I have a disabled child? Well, I would want to make sure that not only is my spouse well taken care of, but there are specific provisions to care for that disabled child. And as a matter of fact, within that, there would need to be specific language to ensure that if a distribution was to go to that disabled child, that indeed they would not be disqualified from governmental assistance. So working in what really it's called a supplemental trust, but it's also known as a special needs trust, during the lifetime of the surviving spouse, but for the care of another person, could also be part of the instructions or needs. There's a lot of income things that we can do as well. So a lot of tax issues. The irrevocable trust, if you were to go onto the internet and start looking through irrevocable trust taxation, you're going to find potential negative consequences to having assets within an irrevocable trust. It's called a compressed tax rate. They're actually the same tax rates as we use on our 1040 as individuals. However, they're compressed. So what that means is that before it jumps to another percentage rate, the amount of income that you can have, they jump faster. So, for example, the 10% rate is found both within a personal tax return and within a tax trust return. However, if you get more than $2,500 in a trust, it jumps to the 20% rate. But it takes well over $20,000 before that tax rate jumps on a personal tax return. So that's a big disparity. However, we can work in things such as, what if we supported all the children and gave them the availability of income? So if a surviving spouse doesn't need the income, they have other assets, they have pensions, or they have other things that are coming to support their lives, and they look at it and go, I really don't want to take on that tax burden. Mm-hmm. Well, there's triggers within an irrevocable trust that says, actually, I would like to move it to my children as a gift this year. Now, the kids are going to pay the tax, but that's okay because they're getting free money. So it's okay. We can give them the tax burden because we gave them the money, and the tax burden would follow them, and it would keep it away from the surviving spouse who already has sufficient funds, who already has income, and we don't want the irrevocable trust to influence the surviving spouse's tax income rate. So there's opportunities then to spread out the income, bless the kids or grandkids, whoever you want to include in the plan, and it's all at the surviving spouse's behest. So in other words, they get the first opportunity. We always take care of each other first. But what if there was an opportunity to use that income to help other people in the family and not take on the tax burden individually? Well, that's a pretty good system. So there's a lot of other opportunities or other instructions. It just depends on what your family dynamics are. It depends on what the needs of the surviving spouse are going to be. And then when we put the surviving spouse in the driver's seat with those decisions, they can really open up an opportunity to assist other people and yet still get a great tax advantage. Now, if we just used a will or if we used joint assets and everything went to the surviving spouse, it's all their tax burden. So we lose some of these opportunities again by not properly planning. Even with a special needs child, there's things that if you support them too much, even coming from a parent, I know it sounds ridiculous, but that would be counted as income, and there could be a disqualification of the government benefits. So we have to plan strategically for all of these different areas pending the family. And we want to look at the family holistically. I don't want to just look at the two people in front of me. Yes, that's the primary concern. But then we can look at the family holistically and say, who else needs assistance? And do you have enough? Or are we going to find ourselves in other predicaments to where if this happens, then we actually want to take care of the family in a different way? Mm-hmm. All of this is available because we have that clean slate to design it as we desire. But if we don't design anything, then we're just left to whatever we get and life goes on. Mm-hmm. So we can be more strategic. and we can look at holistically planning for the family. That's really what we should be doing in estate planning.
A little bit more of a question on the disabled child. Different levels of disability. Maybe the child they have has already been institutionalized mm-hmm. for a while and is getting government assistance,
yeah.
living in a family, adult family home. Or perhaps they're a child who was blind but is otherwise pretty functional, but
right.
still you want to help them.
Yeah, or on the autistic spectrum, and they're reasonably self-caring, but yet have some social anxiety and other things that make it difficult to work and at high levels. There's a huge disparity between totally disabled versus partially or mildly, and all of those things can be addressed. If we needed to look at the family again holistically, that we may need to start a special needs trust right out of the gate and actually begin to provide money and put aside for that individual. That becomes an irrevocable trust for the benefit of them alone, and we don't wait for anyone to die. Mm. Or we can ensure that there is an available bucket of money should one person die, and definitively when the second spouse dies, that child is well taken care of. It's my experience that when there is a child who has a complete disability, we already know that they're going to need lifetime assistance, that the other kids in the family are already trained to defer to that child's needs.
What if it's an only child, though?
Yeah,
who has then, disability.
Yeah, then and I have several clients in that category, which just means we have to have a lengthy list of individuals that they trust that could step in and assist that person. And eventually, we're going to also need to find some institutional care, and we're going to have to do research now for the future, because even though those institutions may change, at least it gives us a strong flavor of what to look for to protect that individual to make the estate plan work properly. So it usually takes multiple layers to care for someone who is permanently disabled to ensure their safety and long-term family needs.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to another part of this, you alluded to rental properties and things like that. What
right.
if you do own a business? Can that business go into the family trust?
Yeah, it can. And that is usually specifically a business that is going to be maintained after someone passes away. That could be a great source of income. And again, I just recently talked about what does it mean to have income? Is it just for the surviving spouse? Is it for the family? Is it for charities? So we can work all of these things in there. But one of the bigger things with business owners is, do we have a succession plan at all? And most business owners do not. They work so hard in their business that they forget to work on their business. In other words, work on the structure, work on the strategy, work on the getting out phase. Estate planning needs to have a strong mechanism of getting out of your business. And what happens if that plan is interrupted due to a disability or early death? We need to make sure that there is a plan that accommodates for all of that, because a family, specifically with small businesses, they're leaning and they're counting on that income, and it's very difficult to turn that baby. It's like another child in the family. It's hard to turn that child over to somebody else. So is the sale going to come from an internal source? Are you raising somebody up? Are you mentoring somebody that you can hand off the business and they're going to continue out? So now you get an annuity payment for the work and the effort of turning it over. Are you going to do an outright sale to that person? Are you going to be the bank and they're going to pay you for the business? Are you going to sell it to outside people? All of those things look very, very different and need to be incorporated into a strong plan. If you are the first to die, because you've worked on the business, your stress level is higher, and again, not only are you working in the business, you forget to work on it, and you forget to work on yourself. So your health sometimes is out of whack, and the whole nine yards. So business owners are one of the more complicated estate planning things that we need to take care of, because you have so many pokers in the fire that we got to unravel this, and we got to start marching down the road of planning complexity. So what does it mean for you to get out, and how do we protect the family, the surviving spouse, or any of the other family members should you need to get out in an unanticipated manner? But we got to plan. It's one of the greatest weaknesses for small business owners, which is you have not planned your escape. We want you to escape your business at some point. So if we don't get you in and look at it again, all together as it blends and moves with the estate plan, then I think there's a disconnect. If you've planned your business transition without doing your estate plan, that's a massive disconnect. And so we got to blend those plans together and bring them into continuity so that they work simultaneously and together so that it is seamless. Because again, if something happens to you sooner than later and it's unanticipated, if we don't have the strong backup in your estate plan or we are missing instructions in your business, then we're going to be left with a pretty good mess for a surviving spouse. Mm.
Okay, well, as we come toward the end of the show here today, what are some additional thoughts you want to leave with us?
Well, really, like I said at the beginning, it's more about what have you done specifically to ensure the safety net of your spouse. You know, we work so hard during our lifetime. We spent 40, sometimes 50, 60, and oh, God forgive me, 70 hours a week on our businesses or working for someone else. And we spent and devoted a massive amount of time to build what God has put into our hands. And yet we're going to fail to not take this next step and make sure that it is well planned for our spouse and for our family. In some ways, that doesn't make sense to me. This is a part of your retirement plan. This is a part of your business transition. This is a part of ensuring your personal safety, that should you become disabled, should you need financial assistance, should you have a health emergency, that all of these things are planned out so that we're not stuck just gathering up the pieces. No one really wants to leave a mess behind. But if we don't come to the table and don't start that planning process, we have no hope of planning it out.
People want to start that planning process with you. How do they get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and more. So head over to legacyandfaith.com.
The Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.